Tar Heel basketball taking on Virginia Tech tomorrow night. 8 p.m. is game time, with coverage beginning at 6:30. Tar Heels 6-1 in conference play, riding a six-game winning streak. They've scored 85 or more points in each of those last six games. Only time they've ever done that in six games in a row in conference play. So the Heels are rolling. Duke, not so much. They're reeling after that upset loss to NC State. We're joined now by Dr. Deb Stroman, professor at the UNC Kenan Flagler Business School and all-around sports expert, to talk about the latest in the athletics world. Dr. Stroman, how are you?
I'm doing great. Great weather. Gotta love the unpredictability of North Carolina in the winter.
Especially when it works in our favor, right?
Absolutely.
So let's talk about the ACC. We got the Tar Heels sort of rolling after that first loss to Georgia Tech. They're doing really well. Duke, not so much. And we were talking about this earlier today, the state of the conference and the strength of the conference and whether it benefits the ACC to have those two dominant schools, UNC and Duke. And you look back at the last, I mean, especially the last 10 years, but you can go back decades with these two schools really dominating in the conference, and just about every metric. You look at road victories, you look at NCAA tournament wins, you look at just the two coaches between Williams and Coach K. These two schools have been really dominant, maybe at the expense of the rest of the conference. So this year you've got Duke maybe not doing so well, UNC still in first place, but a lot more parity in the conference. What's better for the ACC?
Well, it's clear that historically the ACC has been known as a basketball conference, as in we benefit when two particular schools, UNC and Duke, do well. And as most of our listening audience knows, the ACC is an equity conference, all for one, one for all. So even though Duke might get into the Final Four and generate money for all of the member institutions, if Duke is not in a big bowl, or if Clemson goes and makes the money in football, we all still win. But when you have two schools that have that tradition of just winning in basketball and we're kind of guaranteed some money from March Madness, what happens when you have all these competing schools? I think it is good that we have this parity, that we have more schools that are going to represent us and start to be known as a more consistent basketball winner, because certainly we've always had teams that enter March Madness and have a great chance to win it all besides UNC and Duke. But this particular year, where we might indeed have 10 slots filled from March Madness to ACC teams. And of course, the most important thing is to protect your home court. And so when you have that, it really makes for more competition, more engagement by the fans, and certainly prepares you well for the long run.
I'm thinking about this, too, in the context of the Big Ten, because I'm from Michigan, so I always look at that conference, and you look at the Big Ten this year, and you've got a couple of schools, Maryland and Wisconsin, that are on top of the standings, but Purdue, Northwestern, Indiana, Michigan State, Minnesota, Michigan, Iowa, Nebraska, Penn State, they're all within a couple of games of each other. Not all of them are going to make the NCAA tournament, but a lot of them are, and you look at the top 25, not very many teams are anywhere near the top 10. Wisconsin, maybe, depending on which week you're looking at the ranking, is great for Northwestern. They might make the NCAA tournament for the first time ever, but not likely that any Big Ten team is going to be higher than a 3 seed max, and maybe even a 4 seed. Is that, and you take that and translate that over to the ACC, where you could have a whole bunch of teams making it to the NCAA tournament and possibly even doing well, but not necessarily having a real chance, at least on paper, to make it to the Final Four or have a chance to win it all. Which is better there?
Well, you're definitely right. And that quote, where you stand often depends on where you sit. Mm-hmm. So if you're a big ACC fan, you're resting on the history and tradition that some of our lower level, however you define that, lower level schools will still get an opportunity, even though there might be another team in another continent, in another conference, that's playing just as well. But that tradition really helps those ACC teams that aren't used to being invited regularly to the big dance. Another point is that the people tend to overlook the importance of these out-of-conference competitions, such as the ACC Big Ten tournament. And that's a chance, even though it's early in the season, but you do get to go toe-to-toe with another conference to show your strength. So we might have a team like a Pittsburgh upset a team like Virginia. But yet, if Pittsburgh goes out and wins in these challenge games or just a non-conference game win and get a solid win, it really bodes well not only for Pittsburgh but for the entire league. I am definitely biased towards ACC, but we see the type of product that these Hall of Fame coaches, because we have so many of them, these Hall of Fame coaches produce, as in young men who are able to go play at the next level, whether that's overseas professionally or in the NBA.
Speaking with Dr. Deb Stroman, Keenan Flackley Business School sports analyst. And Deb, we got three games left this month for Carolina in conference play. There's the Virginia Tech game, then they head on the road in a couple of days and take on Miami, and then back at home a few days after that to face Pitt. So it's a really tight schedule for the last few days of the month. Art Chansky, way back in December, predicted that the Tar Heels would go undefeated in the month of January. So far, he's right. Do you think he's going to end up being right when all is said and done?
Well, most definitely with the ACC, I think it's a matter of matchups. Teams that you would think that another team would be able to win, but yet for some reason they can't get it done. I think it's because of this lineup and matchup. North Carolina this year, even though Coach Williams has always believed in the importance of pushing the ball and rebounding, this year North Carolina is number one in terms of rebounding, especially on the offensive end. And so you're going to have to look at particular teams that do a good job of boxing out, securing rebounds, making sure that North Carolina is not able to get that quick rebound and then a nice push out and get a fast break. So we have to look at each team, Virginia Tech, Miami, and Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, historically, now they have their coach is now down at Texas Tech, I believe, but their current coach doesn't have the history that the previous coach did, where it was very, very physical and there are big bodies. So Pittsburgh at home, I feel confident North Carolina would win that. Miami, that's a toss-up, because Coach Larrañaga, he knows Coach Williams. They've been friends for years. And we saw what Miami did over at Cameron, over at Duke. Even though they didn't win that game, they were solidly beating Duke in the first half. So that's going to be a challenge, and of course it's an away game. Virginia Tech is the toss-up. Many people feel that even though Virginia Tech is very good, very solid this year, that playing here in Chapel Hill and with so much on the line for UNC to remain in first place, that UNC could possibly even blow them out. I know Coach Williams doesn't want to hear that, but I don't think the matchup is good for Virginia Tech in a game like this.
Speaking with Dr. Deb Stroman, Keenan Flagler Business School. And Deb, let's turn our attention to the other big development in sports going on right now with the Australian Open getting close to wrapping up. First Grand Slam tournament of the year in tennis, and a great run for Serena Williams. She makes the semifinals yet again. And what is this, the 10th time in a row she's made a Grand Slam semifinal? And that might be overshadowed by the fact that her sister Venus made the semis for the first time since 2003, and she's what, 36 years old. So you've got Serena Williams, just the model of consistency, and Venus Williams doing something this year that she hasn't done in more than a decade, and looking at her age, something that no one's ever done before.
Well, I think I'm now on the bandwagon that Serena Williams is the greatest of all time, and I would put her up in the top five athletes of all time, regardless of sport. Serena Williams is just exceptional. She's tied Steffi Graf for the most Grand Slam titles. She's within two of Margaret Courts, and everyone's confident she's going to get that. John McEnroe and Chris Everett have already proclaimed that she's the best tennis player ever. And it's not so much that she wins, but she wins by making the top players look like they're college level or amateurs. There are times when she can just turn it on and you don't have a chance. And these are the best players in the country. Her longevity, as you mentioned, and she plays doubles and singles. So she's not like some players that just want to focus on one particular part of tennis. She plays both. So she and her sister, they're going to get on the court tonight at about 11:15, the semifinals. It'll be interesting to see if they can meet again. I think it will be their ninth Grand Slam final. They haven't been together in the final since 2009. But they are just exceptional. Their ability to be outstanding entrepreneurs, philanthropists, and great tennis players all at the same time, without scandals, without anything to take them away from their focus on the tennis court, is nothing short of amazing.
You've got those two who have dominated women's tennis for so long. On the men's side, you've got the big four, I guess you have to say now, throw Andy Murray in there with Djokovic and Federer and Nadal. And those eras are going to be coming to an end here soon. I mean, Venus has had a great run in this Australian Open, but she is getting to that age where you don't expect her to be really competitive on the global level for much longer. Eventually, you're going to have to say the same thing about Serena Williams, and the same thing is starting to happen on the men's side, where those guys who have dominated every single Grand Slam tournament for the last 10, 12, 15 years are starting to get towards the end of their careers as well. What happens to tennis after all of those greats that we've come to just expect to see in the quarters and the semis and the finals every single Grand Slam tournament? What happens to the world of tennis when they move on?
Well, hopefully it won't go the way of boxing, right? After we lost some of these great figures, especially in the heavyweight division, the world really stopped paying attention.
Yeah.
Now there are avid boxing fans, avid tennis fans that will always keep up with their sport. But it really takes the personalities. You really need that big winner that everybody can aspire to be like or to beat. And sadly, when those two sisters do retire, I question whether or not we will have all eyes on tennis. There is no doubt the ratings go up when Serena or Venus are in the semis and the finals, and the ratings drop, I mean, really, really badly when they're not in it. It's similar to the Tiger effect. Even though you have Phil Mickelson, some great tennis players out there, Dustin Johnson, but still there's something about when you have that celebrity diva that is just raised the bar so high, and then when they finish. Now, Venus, we're just blessed to have her out there playing. It's amazing that she's still playing at this level, considering that she suffered a very, very ugly disease where she almost lost her life, but yet she was able to come back. Serena as well. Again, these women have defied time, injury, and their own aging bodies to just to play breathtaking tennis. And for Serena, the last four sets, she hasn't even dropped one. I mean, it's just, I'm just so humbled and amazed by how these women can continue to play this game at such a top level.
Well, I look forward to seeing them in the finals if they can make it through the semis tonight. Dr. Stroman, we got to let you go. But again, Deb Stroman, thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.